In 2008, Canadian journalist Amanda Lindhout was captured by a gang of Somali kidnappers. She and her Australian colleague Nigel Brennan were held hostage for more than a year. Amanda was starved, raped, and tortured during her time in captivity, and it is not easy for her to talk about what she endured. But she has written a memoir called A House in the Sky, and she sat down recently to talk with Anne Strainchamps about what she believes kept her alive. Forgiveness. This is her story.
On our third day in the country, Nigel and I set out to visit the internally displaced people's camp that we had come to the country to see. And as we did so, we rounded a sort of bend in a road, and we could see there was a car pulled over off to the side up ahead. And as we got closer, about a dozen armed men, all of their faces wrapped in checkered scarves, emerged from where they had been hiding behind that vehicle, and they were all holding AK-47s pointed at ours. And the next thing I knew, I found myself lying face down in the dirt, spread eagle, with a gun held to the back of my head.
Did you realize right away what was going on?
I think it's difficult in a moment like that to accept the reality of what is happening. So it took, in fact, a couple of weeks before the truth of the situation really dawned on me, and I really began to accept that I was a hostage and that this was not going to be over anytime soon.
So in the meantime, you entered this incredibly long, well, in the end you were in captivity for more than 400 days. What were the physical conditions like?
The physical conditions changed over the course of time. Things really changed at about the five-month mark, when Nigel and I were beginning to feel very desperate, and we planned and executed an escape. And following that failed escape attempt, things changed for us both. Everything changed.
How did you even manage to plan an escape? Because at that point, you were kept separately and you weren't allowed to communicate at all.
Our captors had grown lazy. Nigel and I had devised secret ways to communicate with each other when our kidnappers weren't paying close attention. And it was during one of these secret conversations that Nigel pointed out he thought we might have a chance to escape out a bathroom window. It was a bathroom that only he and I used. There was bricks cemented across the front of it, but the house that we were held in, it was old, and the mortar that held those bricks in place was crumbling. And so with a pair of nail clippers that our kidnappers had given us, we took turns sneaking into that bathroom and digging away at that crumbling mortar until we were finally able, after a few days of doing this, to remove a couple of those bricks and jump out a hole about the size of a basketball. And our plan was to run to a nearby mosque where we hoped that we would find some help.
And did you?
Well, of course, it wasn't long before our kidnappers discovered we were missing. We had made some noise when we jumped out the window, and they tracked us to the mosque. The most profound moment of that day, and a moment that I carry with me now through and will through the rest of my life, is the incredible bravery and courage of a Somali woman who risked and may have lost her life that day trying to help me, a woman who entered the mosque in the middle of this chaotic scene, who was dressed in the full Islamic hijab and niqab, and she came directly over to me and she embraced me and she called me her sister and she began pleading with my captors to let me go. And of course, they had no patience for her interference, so they grabbed me by my ankles and began towing me by them across the floor of the mosque towards the door where there was a truck waiting to take me away. But this woman, she hung on to me and she threw her body on top of mine and did everything she could to protect me. And in the end, she was not ultimately able to prevent my kidnappers from putting me in the truck and then everything that happened afterwards.
How did thinking about her, I mean, did you keep thinking about her?
You know, I was faced with, every single day, I was faced with unthinkable abuse, and the conditions were so terrible that it was really difficult not to slide into absolute despair. And there were whole days that I lost in that state of despair. But the longer that I was held, I realized that by allowing myself to go there and allowing my mind to just cycle through those despairing thoughts, which sounded like, why me, or I'll never make it out of here, I was also contributing to my own suffering. And that if I could catch those thoughts when they started to spin through my head, which they were always doing, and replace them with thoughts like, I will be free, I will go home, I choose freedom, I choose peace, and then later, too, I choose forgiveness, that helped me stay above the very dark black pit of despair that I was always trying to fight against going back into. So that's when I really started dreaming about one day being able to create an organization to help, and an organization that would also in large part be to honor the woman at the mosque.
Were you able ever to actually feel any forgiveness at all for your captors?
Forgiveness is, it's such a, I have been working on this process of forgiveness now for years. It's really, for me, as I experience it, not something that happens all at once. Like, you make the choice to forgive, and then that means there's no anger left inside of you. I chose then, as I choose now, every single day, to forgive my kidnappers for what they did to me. And some days I get closer to that than other days, but it is really and truly something that I choose every single day as part of my healing process. And it is my greatest hope, I guess, that one day that will be a state that I live in all of the time.
How did you and Nigel wind up getting free eventually?
Our kidnapping was always about money. Nigel and I had very, very little information in the rooms that we were held in about everything that was going on the other side and the other parts of the world, the extraordinary efforts of both of our families to sell homes and raise money. So our freedom came as a great surprise. And the next day, I was flown out to a hospital in Kenya where I was reunited with my mom, which was such a purely joyful moment. But the truth is that it took weeks for the reality of this new freedom to really settle in. Freedom had been something I had dreamed about for so long. And then now that I was actually experiencing it, what it felt like was a dream. And I still have days that it's hard to, like, fully understand that I am free, because I think once freedom has been taken away from you, and for as long as it was for me, maybe there's a part of me that will always stay there, that will feel not entirely free.
You've been back to Somalia several times. Since then, I guess I find that remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I came home from that experience, I never thought that I would go back to Somalia. But as I've said, I had this idea to create these educational initiatives within Somalia. You know, it was, as I've said, it was not easy to make the choice to go back. But I suppose by facing that, one of my greatest fears, and doing that with the motivation being to help others, there was some healing in that for me. I faced one of my greatest fears, and I came out stronger for it. And that's something that I'm grateful for.
Amanda, thank you so much for your courage in telling the story and for the work that you're doing.
Thanks.
Amanda Lindhout's nonprofit Global Enrichment Foundation supports aid and education for women in Somalia and Kenya. Her memoir, written with Sarah Corbett, is called A House in the Sky. She talked with Anne Strangchamps.